Is the presentation signed by the minister? No, I was saying it's a presentation signed. I didn't check that. It's okay. Just leave it.
John, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you clearly.
Yeah.
Come again.
Dan, can you hear me? I'm testing my speaker, which seems to have a problem.
Yes, I can hear you clearly, DJ. All right.
I mean, it was so big, so there are people working and all this.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, honorable members, and everyone present in the meeting. Chair, the time is 10 o'clock now.
Good morning, honorable members. And a very good morning to the Department of Information and Technology, Science and Technology. Welcome. Can you play the agenda? No. I got information this morning that the minister is out of the country. Oh no, the minister won't be with us. And the DM also, who was supposed to be with us, has also apologized. And I just thought, honorable members, because this is a presentation, that we should give the head of the delegation, the DG, to take us through this presentation of the decadal system plan, anyway, as they call it. And we all know that this plan was approved by cabinet in 2019. It is actually an implementation plan covering the year 2022 to 2031. Is there any move of the agenda on the members? Is there any move for the adoption of this agenda?
I move, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you, Gustav.
There is a move for adoption of the agenda. Member, who is any seconder?
Ndongeni, Chair.
Ndongeni seconds. Thank you very much. We've got two apologies, like I said when I opened the meeting, that is the minister and the DM. I just thought we should continue with this meeting without them, because this is a presentation of a plan, and if there are issues with this plan or whatever, we can engage with them at a later stage rather than this stage. I don't know if that is okay with the members.
Recording in progress.
I propose that we proceed with the meeting. Thank you.
Again.
Chair, I propose that we proceed with the meeting. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thanks. Welcome, DG and your team. You may take us through the your decadal plan. Actually, our interest more will be, how will this improve performance and, you know, delivering the provinces? As the NCOP, that is exactly our interest. What is happening? How will this impact on our provinces? You know, will it make life easier for both teaching and learning? It shouldn't be that difficult. We shouldn't make it very difficult. Yeah, over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks very much to the Honorable. I hope you can hear me. I had a problem earlier on with my machine, so we couldn't do the testing, but I hope you can hear me. Now I can hear you. I just wanted to see.
May I also say, just before that, to step you a little bit, that my speaker on the phone is not very okay, so I'll switch my video off so that I can listen with the phone closer to my ear. You may continue. Is it my phone or are you muted? Did you mute yourself? You are inaudible. Noltando, can you help the DG with the sound? Maybe can anyone help? Because I can't hear anything you're saying.
All right,
Trey,
I'm trying.
Or is it my phone? Maybe my speaker has a very serious problem.
I can't hear either.
Yes, I'm sorry. I hope I'm
out. Oh, that makes me feel much better then.
Okay. Sorry, I had a bit of a challenge with my laptop. I hope, Chair, we can hear me now.
Yes, DJ, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, thank you, thank you. So what we'd like to share with you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as you indicated, what is the philosophy underlying the Deccan Plan? And the fact that we think that the world is changing around us and the rapid change of technological change and the need for us to adapt. We'll give you one or two examples of these changes and why we need to respond to them and how. And then we're going to share with you what we call STI, Science, Technology and Innovation Priority, and some societal current challenges. The point you've made, Chair, one of the areas, the future of work and the future of society, which impacts, of course, on this committee. And then we would like to share with you the enablers of the National System of Innovation. We want to talk about the proposal to have a Science and Innovation IMC, which has been set up after we made a presentation to Cabinet, the Innovation Compact, which we hope will drive the Deccan Plan and commitments that will be made by the various stakeholders, a new model to manage the different components of science, technology and innovation by different government departments, and then an instrument which we call Science, Technology and Innovation Budget Coordination, which we hope will help us to unlock appropriate resources. We would then also give you the progress to date after we were asked to go and consult and what is coming from the consultation, including the feedback from the first interministerial committee that we had last year, and then the next steps in the implementation of the plan, as you indicated, Chair. So this is just a slide that tries to remind us and society at large what we've been working on over the last couple of years. So I won't bore you with the details in each of the blocks, but the most important one is what's at the bottom in the yellow areas, where in the 1995-2005, the focus was developing a national system of innovation that serves the interest of all South Africans. So we put together a number of building blocks that you can see then, a white paper, a technology strategy, national research and development strategy, and the advisory council. And then between 2006 and 2018, we were doing two things. We were looking at whether the NSI can begin to respond to post-1994 demand. So you have science, you continue to build science and capabilities of the system, but identify one or two areas, and hence the activities of bioeconomy, hydrogen society, South Africa, which we developed in 2008, 2010, IPR Act, National Intellectual Property Management Office, and TIA, in order to try and see whether we can make money from knowledge and impact. And then we are now in this 2019-2029 period, where we have a new white paper, as you indicated, Chair, and we are sharing with you the decadal plan. And there was also a review of the Higher Education, Science and Technology Innovation Institutional Landscape that has been done, and we are trying to look at what is being proposed as new institutions or strengthening existing institutions. But at the bottom, as you can see, we are now trying to look at whether the NSI can increase its focus on technology development and innovation for socio-economic development, including supporting a capable state. So that's what we are trying to do then in the next couple of years. So the focus then is to implement the white paper that signaled a need to shift a focus from not only building the NSI, but to see whether we can derive maximum benefits from the system to help address the challenges. We are aware that the South African National System of Innovation has pockets of excellence. So there are areas where we're very good, we're world-class. So the intention is to continue building this NSI by supporting institutions, developing the research capability and high-end skills. So the fact that we want to identify areas where we can have higher impact of the work that we do, but we have to continue to build the research capacity, because if it dies, then we cannot harvest anything out of it. We would like to work closely with the social sciences because some of the problems, as you will see in the priorities, are social problems, and therefore the science and innovation needs to speak to these social problems that we have in South Africa and the world. We also need to be aware that there are huge transitions that are happening in the area of health, education, as you indicated, and energy. And therefore, we need to be able to provide evidence-based transitions that need to be managed as we go forward. So we did indicate that we need to respond to a changing world. So just to remind you that the science, the white papers and the decadal plan are based on science, technology, and innovation that will enable inclusive, sustainable development in a changing world, of course, in South Africa. So these words are very, very important. Can we contribute to inclusivity? Can we contribute to development? Can we respond to a world that is changing? So this is an example of how society and technology can really be affected by an example where we are of the opinion, and we see these things happen, that the vehicles of the future are going to be different. We already know that by 2035 in the EU, they would like to reduce the vehicles that are driven by internal combustion engines that use petrol and diesel into electric vehicles. And then there are expectations that later there could be other vehicles that are not really using petrol and or diesel. Something like this means that your fuel infrastructure that you have would be changed completely. The market and people who use cars would be different. The structure of the industry would be different. Maintenance and distribution. People say, for instance, for an electric car, you only have very few parts. So people who are making money out of servicing cars will be out of the market unless they adapt. Road and traffic infrastructure would be different. So just one change in technology changes the impact of the society in a way that we haven't imagined. So this is one example. The second one is this slide. side. What you see on the right-hand side is a new regime, a new society, a new world that is driven by what you see in the middle, which are a number of changes that are happening at this point in time. And these changes are driven by changes in science, changing in society as the way that I've given. And what we see in the world is we see small networks of actors that are supporting new ways of doing things, which will change society from where we are on the left-hand side into this new future. So we need to understand what these changes are, what these new niche areas are, so we are able to then get onto the new world and be able to make money and have a society that has jobs. So this is another example of how something such as artificial intelligence is changing a number of sectors, whether it's in the banking sector, whether it's in the transport sector, education, communication, workplace, sports, and so forth. So what this means, for an example, is that unless we invest in artificial intelligence and how it is applied in a number of sectors in South Africa, we're going to find ourselves left behind and consuming new products. And in fact, we will not take advantages of, for an example, can we train young people in these areas and begin to have new sources of growth that are brought about by artificial intelligence. So how do we then see the priority for the future? We see climate change and circular economy as important areas where we need to really drive science, technology, and innovation for socio-economic impact. Education for the future. The future of society will be a completely different society across all the living standard measures in South Africa and the world. ICTs and smart systems, high-tech industrialization, nutrition, water, health innovation, and sustainable energy. I will talk about this a lot more. So these slides are just trying to look at what we call societal grand challenges in the decade plan. The first one is climate change and sustainability, and what we have done here is we have put more meat on what this means. Issues such as biodiversity loss, issues of how we manage waste, how we deal with pollution and soil erosion, as an example. Education, skills, and the future of work, this is an area which we really need to invest in. ECD, TVET colleges, skills for the fourth industrial revolution, curriculum changes that we need to put in place, STI for education and skills development, the role of information and communication technologies and others. And then the future of society, we have seen the impact of rapid technological advancements on human and social dynamics. Artificial intelligence and ethics, inequality and livelihoods that will be impacted by these new changes, issues of trust, issues of national identity, and so forth and so forth. So we are going to put together teams that will be providing government with what are the implications of this going forward. We need to look at how do we make innovation to support a healthy population, how do we innovate for the energy security, and how do we innovate to support a capable state. We also have identified areas where there will be new sources of growth, the circular economy and digital economy. So we've started to do work in these areas. We are financing, for instance, a very good and a large program on digital economy and its applications in society and certain sectors. We've started to look at the investments that we had been doing on the waste and how it can respond to the circular economy. And then we have a range of activities where we would like to make sure that the sectors of the economy, such as agriculture, mining, and manufacturing, are modernized to make sure that the social issues that could be impacted by technologies in these sectors and the support for SMMEs is something that as a country we're going to do. So allow me, Chair and honorable members, to just give you a flavor of what do we mean by agriculture. So here we've selected how we can have productivity challenges that can be addressed by digitization and precision tools that include high and volatile input costs on fertilizer and water, delayed detection of crop animal diseases, outbreaks, and inability to timely access market trading information by the farmer, in particular small-scale farmers. This is very, very important. I'm sure you've seen in TV in the last couple of days where in the EU, where we are exporting some of the agricultural products, for weeks our agricultural products were not allowed to enter into the EU. So we need to start looking at, for instance, ICT-based applications that could offer tools such as Internet of Things and the integration of satellites, drones, and sensor technology, for instance, to drive crop monitoring improvements and disease diagnostics, saving millions of rands and loss of production. So that's one specific example. We will then be working, we have started to work with the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development on incorporating some of these ideas into agriculture. We think that big business can probably adopt these new modern ways of agriculture, but our small-scale farmers, they may be in your provinces that you represent, and part of the implementation would be to identify those programs in the provinces in order to ensure that these new tools to modernize agriculture can be implemented. The same goes for manufacturing. How do we have new thinking for new industries and new thinking for matured industries? And how do you use advanced ICT-based applications to drive productivity improvements in manufacturing? We have started with the CSIR to look at what is called the smart factory as part of making sure that, for instance, young and small entrepreneurs and, of course, big businesses can come there and start to look at how you can modernize manufacturing. There are other areas of work as a department that we have invested in the past, in the energy space with the hydrogen fuel cells, in the area of satellite manufacturing, and also in the areas of launching satellites as part of moving into the medium to high-end exports. In the mining area as well, it is extremely important that with increasing costs, declining grades, and increasing average depths of mining, we are able to provide technological solutions to make sure that we have improving recoveries and find innovative ways and new cost-effective ways of extracting these minerals and these commodities that we have in the ground. So given these challenges, we are proposing the adoption of digital technology and data analytics that we believe offer tremendous benefits for the mining sector. We are working now with them on a program called South African Mineral Extraction Research Development and Energy, and Innovation, and we now want to see whether we can add new areas of work working with them. In the energy space, we have now something which we call Hydrogen Valley, which is an area stemming from Richards Bay, Durban, and moving all the way along the N3 in up to Joburg, Pretoria, and Mokolakwe. What we are proposing here is that we have hubs of technological capabilities where we will have our hydrogen products, hydrogen infrastructure, to kickstart the adoption of this cleaner energy in this field. So in Durban, for instance, we are having discussions with airports company of South Africa. We are having discussions with the Port of Durban to look at converting, for instance, the material handling machines, including hoisters, from diesel into being hydrogen power. We see a situation where we could speak with the Department of Transport to start changing some of the diesel buses and feed them with hydrogen fuel cells, and therefore putting all the refueling infrastructure between Durban and Johannesburg. We would like to work with the mining houses in Polokwane to start looking at how we can retrofit some of the material handling transport in the mines, including powering mines with hydrogen and fuel cells. So this is the work that we would like to do in the next 10 to 15 years, which we believe will create new economic opportunities and will require new skills that are needed. So this is just giving an example of what will be happening in Mogalakwena in the Limpopo Hub, where we want to convert mining trucks, in Durban Richards Bay, as I said, and along the N3 corridor with port activities that could be changed, and then in the Johannesburg Hub to try and begin to use hydrogen-based green and grey hydrogen to drive the activities of iron and steel in some of the sectors. And by doing this on the left-hand side, we hope to increase the demand for hydrogen. And by increasing the demand for hydrogen, we hope by 2030 to bring the cost down from $4 per kilogram, which is very expensive, to about 2 to 2.5, because as you know, the higher the demand, the costs come down. What we have done in the last couple of years in this Hydrogen Society roadmap, we've decided to divide our milestones and our activities into three phases. This phase between 21 and 24, we've identified that we'll be able to produce small-scale electrolyzers and gigawatt hydrogen production for power that can be done. And then we've scaled this up between 25 and 2030, and even more so in 2030, 2040. And what this does, it allows us to quantify, as you can see here, the number of jobs that will be required. And these are new jobs that will be working on hydrogen fuel cells, retrofitting these hydrogen fuel cells, fueling stations, producing hydrogen fuel cells for stationary applications. We are estimating 20,000 jobs that will be created annually by 2030, and about 30,000 jobs that will be created annually by 2040. So it's quite a big program. It will transform the energy sector, and then we are working with our colleagues from higher education and training to start looking at the skills that we need. Another program that we are embarking on is a program that could address some of the pollution challenges in Mpumalanga and some of the areas where we have coal-fired power stations. We do know that there is pollution that comes out of the stacks of these coal-fired power stations and industrial plants. We have particulate matter, we have mercury, some gases of nitrous oxide and sulfuric oxide, which do not comply with the legislation. And then you have poor air quality, and then people are sick, they die, decreased economic activity. So what we are proposing is in these coal-fired power stations and industrial plants, is whether we can produce hydrogen, green hydrogen in particular, and green ammonia, and feed them into the power station. And by so doing, we can reduce the particulate matter and these dangerous gases, and actually produce fertilizer, sulfuric acid, hydrogen and ammonia. So we can produce on-site commodities and create new jobs. And as we can see, the objective of this coal CO2 to X program is to convert coal-fired power stations and industrial flue gas into multiple on-site industrial commodities. So this is an area of work that we are extremely excited about. and which we are also driving. And in fact, this is an example of a pilot technology demonstration program that we have identified in Limpopo province, where we are taking a cement factory and we'll be taking flue gas and take ammonia and convert this into a fertilizer production plant. This is a demonstration of what I have just showed in the previous slide, where you can really continue to have these plants producing what they are producing, but hopefully for the next 5 to 10 years, you innovate around this so you can support the industry, but whilst cleaning the environment. We also have decided to invest in vaccine development, drug discovery, medical devices, diagnostics, as well as the production of active pharmaceutical ingredients for health products. So this is the work that we hope to do in the next 10 years. What these slides show is the amount of money that we are spending per year buying vaccines. What you see on the left-hand side is different types of vaccines and where we get them from. And as you can see, they are predominantly imported into South Africa. So we spend about 12.8 billion rands roughly on buying these vaccines. The same for a private sector expenditure on vaccines in South Africa. Again, we show on the left-hand side the vaccines that are imported, the quantity, and the amount of money we're spending. So we're spending around about 12.8 and 12.6, so we spend about 25 billion rands on vaccines. So what we would like to do is to start having local innovation and local IP, intellectual property, that we are going to use to start having certain vaccines being locally produced. So this is a program that we've started to do, and very, very soon we'll be able to make some announcements. We also have set up this National Policy Data Observatory, which was very, very significant during COVID-19 to provide data and information that was used by the National Corona Virus to be able to track the disease, understand how people's attitudes were on the disease. So we are very, very happy about this because it was using scientific information to provide decision-making or policies that could be derived. We also recently provided the expertise. The Data Observatory was supporting how we can assist in the rehabilitation and remediation in the area of that were devastated by disaster in KZN. Recently, you probably heard that the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, together with one of investigating units, to sign an MOU on how they can draw on the scientific capability that the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research and others have to provide data analytics to assist in strengthening cybersecurity. This you may find exciting. Again, we have now started to look at how we can use the district development model and identify impact areas from the project that we can then, through the DDM model, implement in different type of different provinces. So we are looking at whether the projects that we are putting together can have life-changing opportunities. So this means skills development, entrepreneur support, incentives and support for tech startup innovation, SMEs and co-ops, support for young people, youth innovation incentive scheme. So we then put together for this impact area one that can have life-changing opportunities for people. And I will show you now the different types of projects that we are still trying to put them around these impact areas. The second impact area is where economic competitiveness and recovery could be achieved. So here we're looking at local systems of innovation and production. We're looking at innovation for local economic development, innovation support for existing sectors, as I indicated, new area on, and support for new sources of growth in the digital economy and circular economy. So we've got 12 of such projects for now. And then we have areas where we can have access to basic services and infrastructure, and whether we can use innovation to improve basic service delivery in water, energy, human settlement, waste management, and others. And then the last area is where we can use knowledge, for instance, to deal with some emerging societal problems or the ones that exist. For an example, youth in drugs, environmental pollution and degradation, as I've shown earlier on, climate change, smarter cities, decision support tools, and policy research. So these are the four categories, or the four ways in which we categorize the initiative that the system has been doing. We know you can't see this, but what we show, for instance, in the middle, is the initiatives that the system has in Gauteng, and how we can then package them along those four areas in order to be able to support the district development model. So these projects, as you can see, they are in the Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng. We have the largest in KZN, Limpopo. So it's across all the provinces. And what you see at the top is how many in the different provinces are in impact area one that I've showed earlier on, how many impact two, three, four. So again, we can package these projects along these four impact areas in the different provinces. So this is what we're doing now here, and this is referenced in the geographic space, so we'll be able to provide you with this in much more detail once the DDM has been completed. So what are the enablers for the implementation of the Sekelu plan? The first one, I did indicate that we have a ministerial committee, interministerial committee, mainly made up of government ministers. This has met, and they also asked us to go and consult. Once the consultation has been completed, we are proposing to have a science and innovation presidential council or plenary that will involve government, so all of these ministers, business, academia, and civil society. And we hope that there would be a science and innovation compact that would enable programs that have to be funded and implemented collectively across departmental boundaries and private sector. And we think that the levers that we have are budget coordination and this strategic management model which we have proposed, which we think will help us then to drive the implementation of. So what's the purpose of the Innovation and Skills Compact that we hope to sign soon? Is to ensure policy coherence and certainty related to innovation. We hope to ensure synergy among rather than the duplication of initiatives and incentives, and to ensure commitment from the relevant actors to working together to enhance innovation performance. We also think that it is extremely important to have targeted education and skills that will support innovation. And as I've indicated in the ministry, with our sister department, we've started to map out the skills that we need and how we need to educate the workforce of the future. We would like to start managing the leakage of intellectual properties from the institutions that expand and have increased support for converting that knowledge into commercial products. We would like to use public procurement of locally developed technologies. What this means, for an example, is that in the vaccine local production slides that I've shown you, if we don't use public procurement, government saying we will buy from whoever the entity that will be producing vaccines, if the government says that there is no commitment, it doesn't make sense for us to continue to then try and produce the vaccine. And then we want to improve the capabilities across government to support innovation and to increase the spatial footprint of innovation in South Africa in line with the district development model that I've just shared. So there is a process for a budget coordination. We've started to work with our colleagues from the National Treasury. There will be a role for the National Advisory Council on Innovation to collect data, to understand how the different departments are investing in science, technology, and innovation, and start to include this process in the budgeting process at National Treasury. The second proposal is to agree that the various departments will play a different role. For an example, on the left-hand side, as the Department of Science and Innovation, we're proposing that we need to put a lot of resources in building the emerging areas, whether it's in the biotech area, in the nanotech area, in the digital area, digital technologies area, as well as, for instance, in circular economy. So we will build those foundational areas. But when it goes to their applications in the middle, we propose that sector departments take a lead. So when we talk about modernizing agriculture, health, and or mining, we then need to work with the Department of Agriculture, Health, and DMRE, and they need to earmark resources and help to implement those areas. And therefore, the DSI funding on the green line would be more on the left-hand side, and then it would decline as we go on the right-hand side. And the proposal is that the other government departments must then, on the dotted line, maybe less on the left-hand side, but more on the right-hand side, of course, with the private sector as well. So this is a model that we are proposing. But this model must be supported with budgets that is allocated. So we've started to understand the challenges of budgeting. And we're finding that there's inadequate support for research development activities and funding across some sectors of government. Not all S&T national departments allocate staff to plan and manage their STI work. So we'd like to see and propose that maybe some DSI officials or somebody in a department is focusing on STI. Reallocate budgets to other priorities is something that seems to happen in other government departments, and we would like to then arrest this. And then we also are seeing that the number of public research organizations are increasingly under financial pressure, and they are then not focusing on building the capabilities of science. On the budget coordination, we already had the meeting of DGs, National Treasury, myself, and DGDPME. We have set up technical working groups with National Treasury that are looking at how we can integrate public science, technology, and innovation budget coordination mechanism into the process of budgeting. We have modeled the amount of money that we need to reach the target. We have already worked very closely with the Government Technical Advisory Center, GTEC, and National Treasury on how the DSI can enhance the monitoring and evaluation of budgets. And then we have engaged with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in order to see whether STI priorities can be integrated into the mandate paper. And we hope that this will be endorsed by the Interministerial Committee soon. So we have engaged on this project coordination with national departments, and we'll continue to do that, on what percentage of budgets from health, agriculture, and so forth need to be put aside for science, technology, and innovation activity. I think I've already talked about this, so I will not go through this slide. So what's the highlights? Cabinet has approved this decadal plan for further consultation, and we have had deep engagements with the NEDLEC structures, and I think we have another meeting next week. We have engaged with National Treasury on this budget coordination, and then the DSI started integrating the implementation of the decadal plan priorities into the APPs of the department and entities, and we are still again socializing this into the stakeholder. We have a draft framework for the Innovation Compact that I shared with you, and we hope to have another IMC meeting after this one, which we have in 2024. We have consulted widely, STI Intensive Department, Industry Association, National Treasury, Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, as I indicated, Civil Society, Science Council, Higher Education, and so what's emerging from these consultations is that there needs to be a greater and structured institutionalization between business and government departments to enable the development and implementation of sector-led research development and innovation plans, formulate a co-investment framework that will enable business to drive a return on investment for their investment. Also, how is the TechEd plan going to be implemented in the current constrained fiscal environment? These are some of the issues that were raised by the private sector. They have also asked that the importance of entrenching STI as part of basic and tertiary education curriculum is important. And then labor has raised issues of making sure there is a balance that is aimed at not minimizing jobs whilst we move into these new areas, something that we are consulting and working with them very closely. There was an inaugural meeting November last year, and these are the ministries that were represented, quite a large spectrum, but important. So where to from here? We want to consolidate all the feedback from consultation with social partners at NEDLAC. We want to start working on the societal current challenges and how we can institutionalize the implementation, update the budget coordination project, and finalize the innovation and skills compact that I have indicated. So we hope to table the TechEd plan at the meeting of DGs in October. We hope then to host the second IMC at the end of October and table the TechEd plan to cabinet for final approval in November, and we hope to have the first plenary that I indicated in March 2020. So, Chair, I'd like to stop here, and thanks very much. We would be very, very happy to take perhaps quick questions of clarity, comments, advice on how to finalize this document, which we have already started to implement, but of course, just to get the endorsements by the IMC cabinet and then to have plenary. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. As you can see, I've moved from the office to the car so that I can take advantage of the speakers in the car. Honourable members, here's the presentation by the department. It's very interesting and actually inspiring. I realized during this presentation that as this committee, we really don't have enough information about what the Department of Science and Innovation is doing in terms of its programs, particularly, getting briefings on cutting-edge technologies, emerging technologies that are developed in the country by the department, of course, through its other institutions, and new technologies that are developed by people in communities. We've heard about this thing in Mpumalanga. This young person was producing fuel from recycling plastics. I'm not a scientist, but I think from the figures that you are showing in terms of how much you get when you subject plastic to a particular pressure and combined with this and that, it's able to produce fuel that they are using in the village, If this thing is not fake news and it's true, what is this that we are doing to make a follow-up? I don't think in other instances, people who involved in this in science and technology as their business, they will know where to go, they'll know at which door to knock and where to get funding for development of this. But when we get something from a local newspaper, from a radio, isn't there something that we can do, for instance, to follow up and just find out what is this thing? Is this person lying? Because somebody can vent plastic and buy petrol and say this. I don't mean to say that this person was lying. The kind I'm trying to show is that I think there's need, for instance, in other instances, to take initiatives and make follow-ups. You may be doing that, but because we are not getting any feedback and briefing, so we really are not aware of those kind of things. And as I said earlier, the roadmap of the STI, you know, the map of the STI in the provinces. During the presentation, I could see that something happening in Limpopo, this and that, in KwaZulu-Natal. I know in KwaZulu-Natal there was some place where they are getting gas from the dams. What interventions, or maybe, you know, encouraging municipalities to and the Department of Environment to make follow-ups on reclaiming this, dumps, or even legalizing them, because there are instances where you get dumps where they are not supposed to be, you know, just down the river. I mean, they say dump here, and then down the hill is a river. So obviously, there will be filtration into the river from whatever you throw in that dump will actually find its way into the river, and that's affecting livelihoods of communities. You know, but the gap in terms of information between us and you, it's huge. But I think we must find a way of closing those gaps. Honourable members, there is the great presentation by the department. And I just want to check whether are there questions and or points of clarity. Over to you, Honourable members. I'm watching this thing from the car. A show of hand will be useful if they appear on the system. But you know, for me, this is a serious information overload there. I know that not all politicians are scientists. While we also agree that not all scientists are politicians. So we need to meet each other halfway through coaching and sharing information and together, you know, moving forward to make sure that science and technology helps us to impact on poverty and underdevelopment. Also the Department of Basic Education, we know, as a country, we're opening a new way of getting into the new tech world. That's why they've introduced the robotics and others in schools. But you know, robots have been there in the past. During the 70s, they were used by the military. They only came into the public domain a little bit late when the technology is nearly outdated. But are we really, are you teaching our children outdated technologies, or are we dealing with the real things of the 21st century and looking at challenges facing the 21st century, because we're supposed to be planning ahead as technical and political animals in this field. Over to you, honorable members, and that, because this is a new thing and we have this gap of information, some of the questions will send them over to the department just for explanations, you know, why why this thing is called Decatel system. You know, and the when this cabinet decision was taken in 2019, all of us were not in this. I don't think we're privy of what was in the info and all that. So a little briefing will actually help going forward. Thank you very much, DG and the team. Over to members, those who have questions now. You may. And yeah, in the absence of any question, other members, I'll ask that we release. Okay. Maybe if you could comment, try to answer some of the questions that would. Yes, Baba, who is that?
It's Ntube, Chaplain, my apologies.
Yes. Honorable Ntube, yes, you are welcome.
No, thanks, Chair. I can't use the raise hand function, Chaplain. That's why I just came in like that. My apologies again.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome.
No, Chair, I just want to share that I think there is a lot that we are really missing. There is a lot that we do not know. I mean, this is a quite extensive information to consume at once, Chaplain. And I think, like you have, it's time that we should familiarize ourselves with whatever that is happening, Chaplain. But I just have to, you had mentioned that robots have existed even, I think, before. It's not something of now. It was in the military before. And I want to check because you see, you are dealing with a, because we must plan ahead for all of us. We should work it on the law of balancing. Your person must balance between us. I know that it's really inevitable, Chairperson. It's really inevitable. My take here is that we all of us know that fourth industrial revolution will impact usually on the human resource. Majority of our people will not be able to have a work. For those who work will do just the minimum work, because majority of us will really depend on your robots and technological advancement for things like a production, manufacturing, and so forth, Chair. So I just want to check on that. How do we balance between the two, Chair? Because if we're not going to balance it, we'll have a problem in the future, Chairperson, whereby you find it that the 80% of the population is out of work, 20% is in work, and that will create a very, very big problem for us, Chairperson. Secondly, Chair, I think this is a good presentation thus far, but I want to check, Chair, that I think the DG had mentioned that the country is losing about almost 25 billion per annum in procurement of vaccination. And then they had said that I'm not sure if they have or they are planning to tap in that in that sector. So I want to check how far they are with us as a country producing our own vaccination. Before, Chair, I think it's 3 years back. 3 years back, and I think I'm asking the same question. I don't know if the question that I'm asking now where attended to. I had said, I think 3 years back, the country were hit by drought, Chair. I think now I'm referring to the agriculture in terms of the ICT consent. There was an instance where the country had a drought, and I think livestock of farmers died because there was no water, and then even grass was not there. And then I said that I think it was in Dubai, I'm not sure, where they stimulate clouds with using the drone. So that technological advancement. So I want to check how far they are, because I think the last time I asked that question, they said that it's something that is normally practiced. I'm not sure if it has came into our shores as a nation, Chair. So I just want to check on those three issues, Chair, that how really, because if you listen to the presentation and read it, I mean, these are the best solutions that we can come across, Chair. So I want to check, Chair, that when are we going to see as a nation this technological advancement in our in reality? Because as things stand now, Chair, I think I am correct to say that they are only on paper. They are not there. We can't see them now. So I think I will just pause there, Chair. I will say if I've got a follow-up question. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Nziba. You take my microphone and left the video on. Thanks a lot, Honorable Nziba, for your questions. Is there another question from the members? Yeah. DG, you may give us up with the questions at the end.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair and the members. And we would like again to say the offer of engaging with you a lot more on these issues is accepted by us. So I don't know, though, how we action this, Chair. Is it something that perhaps from the department side we work closely with the Secretariat so we can identify key areas of work that you may have an interest in, so we can have in your program specific updates that we can provide you. Maybe there's something that I would ask at DDG Zwane and the team to engage your office on, of course, in consultation with you on which areas we can unpack. The two that I want to maybe propose as immediate areas where we can share detailed developments, it's something which we call a district development model in detail. So as you have indicated, the set of initiatives that we had in each province along those four impact areas that we shared earlier on. So this could be a presentation that we can share with you, because in response to the last point by Honorable Nzube, not all of these ideas, Honorable, are not being done. Some of them are. And that's why the document is a 10-year plan, so we want to continue. If you remember our philosophy that in the last couple of years we were building the system, but now we want to really drive in the next 10 years deeper engagement with the actors in the system to make sure that they can fill these projects so that they are not just in on paper. So that's the first thing that we would like to propose, Chair, and in response to the last comment made by Honorable Su. The second area of work that we could share with you is something which we are running in the program called the Grassroots Innovation Program. This is a program which is a bottom-up program where the innovators, people with ideas, they are invited through one of our agencies to indicate what ideas they have or which ideas they are working on. And then as part of improving the idea and or a product that they already have, they would then be provided with the know-how, either at the technology stations that we have across the different provinces and or at one of our science institutions. So this is something that we can share with you again in a formal presentation to give you a sense of the beneficiaries, how the program works, and how that program can then respond to the example that you gave of a person that we end up in newspaper, reading newspaper saying, I have this idea. And then later on, of course, when we have developed and finalized the areas of the future of work and the future of education in response to Honorable Zuber's question of how do we balance the two, Mr. Patel would be more than happy to come and share with you the thinking on how this could be addressed and how we would be able, perhaps in the next 5 years, drive the balance. We've already shared with you, for instance, that introducing the Hydrogen Society roadmap, working with the Energy and Water CETA, where we're taking unemployed graduates in the TVET space, and they are further trained on how to maintain and run some of these hydrogen fuel cells. So new skill set for the new industrial activity so that you minimize unemployed youth in this case. And then we might also be at that stage sharing with you some of the programs that we are having as part of the President Jaro Youth Employment Initiative. But we can then talk about how we see the work that we are doing on fourth industrial revolution and how that would impact which sectors and how we are then going to work with others to do the reskilling and the retraining. So those are then the three specific areas of work that we can follow up on. And then it may also be useful for us to share with you what we call provincial innovation systems and how we work with provinces to encourage them to drive innovation at provincial level. Because we don't have provincial competence, but by working with those structures that we are working on with, we might be able to drive innovation. For an example, in KZN, we are working with Moses Kotane Institute. They have developed something which is called an innovation strategy for the province in KZN. We have engaged with the Itala Bank that has identified areas of growth that they would like to finance in this innovation space, working with young people. And we are having a follow-up meeting with Itala Bank and some actors of the system to further discuss some of the ideas that we discussed with the bank. We will then also have a meeting with the Moses Kotane Institute. So these are early days of trying to institutionalize these issues. This is the point that you raised, Chair, that unless you have institutions in the province that they can then set up their own innovation ecosystem so that the information in the provinces can then follow up much, much quicker, we are in a better position to respond to that. And then the vaccine 25 billion strategy, we've completed different components of the strategy, Honorable Zulu. We know how we are going to continue to work with BioVac. Yesterday, this morning, there'll be an announcement that will be made by Aspen in this area of vaccine production. So on the private sector side, we've got those champions. However, the money in vaccine is not made with putting an ingredient into the small vial that we get jabbed with. It's in the ingredient and the formulation of the ingredient that goes into the vaccine itself. So that's where we would like to focus attention on, as well as the clinical trials to test those vaccines or those candidate vaccines That's where the expensive part of the program is. So that's where we are. We have identified four areas where we're going to invest. We are giving ourselves 3 years to have the best vaccines that we could produce in South Africa. We think this is a realistic target. Of course, we will require, as I say, working together by different government departments. So we'll be tabling a strategy by the end of this year on how this can and should be done in South Africa, and then we're going to start the program next year. So we can update you in the next couple of years as we continue to work with you. I don't know if the idea of seeding the clouds in order to stimulate rain is still happening, but I do know that in Mpumalanga, the South African Weather Service, at that time I think it was called the Weather Bureau, started this project. And my recollection is that it was stopped, and it was stopped because of the acid that came with the rain. And therefore, instead of having rain that helps crops, the rain did not help because it came with a lot of acid. I don't have an update on that, I'll be honest, but if any of my DDGs and the rest of the staff that are here, but what we do focus attention on is something which we call drought-resistant crops, and how do you manage scarce water resource in what we call precision irrigation. So in other words, how do you make sure that got water that is scarce, but you don't just use unnecessarily long water, and which crops and varieties through knowledge can be used in those dry areas which are susceptible to drought. So so we're only giving you part of the answer. The answer of the cloud seeding is that something specific, it doesn't really lie within the Department of Science and Innovation. I think it was implemented at that time by the Department of Environment. So I don't know if Imran wants to say anything about how he sees the future of work and the future of society as part of implementing the decade plan, and if Dr. Moope wants to say anything about the provincial innovation systems, and maybe if he could respond to the follow-up to the young person who made a claim of producing petrol. So maybe let me hand over to those. Rebecca, if you want to say anything on the vaccine over and above what I've said, you're more than welcome. So let's start with Imran, Dr. Moope, and Rebecca.
Thanks, DG, and thanks to the members of the committee. Apologies about the voice. I'm struggling with a hay fever, and I'm looking forward to the first rains of the season. In terms of the future of education and work, at the moment, what we're doing is that there's a number of universities and other institutions, including some of our social partners, whether it's business or the trade unions, have been looking at this and have also initiated research. So as part of the kind of white paper commitment to coordinate effectively so that we can really use the capabilities across the system, what we're doing at the moment is identifying what exists across the different universities, etc., and working with those players to craft out a medium-term agenda, but a medium-term agenda that's not only focused on doing more research, but really using what we already know. I mean, there's some very, very nice work that has been done. Some of it, for example, the president was involved in with the ILO. There was an ILO, a very, very big commission that was set up about 3-4 years back that looks at the future of work and then obviously the future of skills. There's work by the World Economic Forum. There's local work, etc. To pull this together and to actually get that analysis and understanding to people who are making decisions about the future of work and about the future of education. So, for example, business organizations, trade unions, etc. I think that's the missing gap. There's good research, and there are people who are looking at this issue. either as a threat, as a challenge, or they're confronting it on a real basis. Trade union, when we engaged with the trade unions, it was very interesting because people were telling us that, you know, this is what their members are talking about. So can we, for example, work with the trade unions to identify workplaces that are at risk of automation or digitization, but also workplaces that have successfully transitioned, that has been able to use technology effectively to enhance their productivity, etc., and bring that together in some way so that this is available and that other business players and other trade unions can have a much more fuller picture of what is happening, because it's not as easy as saying that robots will replace people, people who are very supportive of technology. And I straddle both fields. I'm not a techno-optimist, neither am I a techno-pessimist. And the techno-optimist will say, no, you know, new jobs will be created, WEF will do this. But you tell that to a worker on the ground, they say, we don't believe you, in a sense. And then at the same time, you get the techno-pessimist who basically say, you know, we're going to lose our jobs, we're going to struggle, etc. And what is actually required is to straddle that middle way based on informed understanding, analysis, and good research and data and science. So, for example, we don't have a handle of what exactly is happening, how many jobs have been replaced by technology, in what sectors, etc. So through the grand challenge, we're hoping that we will be able to deal with this challenge, which is not confronting only South Africa, but it's confronting the world. We can deal with it in a headlong way, but in a way that doesn't just reinforce the techno-pessimist or the techno-optimist, but do it in a way that is guided by our own material realities. And then very importantly, can we find those, what I call niches — this is the way that the innovation policy people think about it — find those niches where people are using technology very, very effectively to create new kinds of work. And a good example here is micro-work. There's some very interesting models that have been tried and piloted in countries like Ghana, but we're doing it as well on our own, where people are able to take piece jobs, but technology piece jobs in a way that is not just disempowering, etc., and create livelihoods. So we need to find these cases and bring this conversation, give this conversation what we again call directionality. We need to steer it along to say that this is not something we should be fearful of, and neither should we be overly enthusiastic about it. Let's deal with it in a very practical, pragmatic, and realistic way. So at the moment, what we're doing is basically finding out what's happening, what's being done, so that we can put together a kind of a plan, and hopefully at the World Science Forum that's happening in December, the minister can make announcement around an effort guided by science on thinking about the future of work and education. There's two other grand challenges, but I won't speak to that now, DJ. I hope that was helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, DG. I'm just going to be providing some highlights on the work that we're doing at provincial level and local government level. And this work that we're doing is really being done in partnership with both provincial and local government. And the reason behind that is that we cannot just do work on our own as a department at this various government level. So only when there is buy-in and investment by both local government and provincial level do we really start initiatives. We got initiatives going in a number of provinces, and there are a few municipalities that have come on board. And these initiatives are about creating opportunities for innovation-based employment or entrepreneurship, where we also have, in some instances, partnerships with players in the private sector, but also looking at having to implement some partnerships with the CITES. So these initiatives are basically on the basis of piloting. The reason being that as soon as we find them to be working properly, then we can, with various other government partners, actually look at how those can be massified after they have been tested and the various innovations have been found to be useful in a particular locality. So this year we are looking to expand this. They vary, some of them are focusing on what we call entrepreneurs, creating young entrepreneurs who are graduates, not employed, but who can actually take various roles in environmental entrenched entrepreneurship. We also have those that are focused on culture and those that are focused on ICT. So we do, I think as DJ has said, when we are presented with the opportunity to go into details as to where these projects are and how they are going, we will probably be able to highlight that. Because these are the very same initiatives that we are now using to anchor our work under the district development model, where we're looking at district aligned initiatives, where we know that there are specific opportunities that are only applicable to a particular region, and we'd like to build on those. So I think that's probably where I'm going to stop it. My apologies, I'm just waiting at the hotel reception to be checked in, and I hope that there wasn't too much news. Thanks very much.
So, good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak this morning. I'm going to really discuss the issues of vaccines. I think one statistic that's very important is that currently only 1% of human vaccines are manufactured in Africa. And if you look at the targets of the AU, you know, African Union, they have a target to, I think, produce or manufacture 60% of human vaccines in Africa by 2040. And if we're going to make that target, we're really far behind. And I think South Africa is probably one of the best, has one of the best opportunities for playing that role for Africa. Not all 60%, but we can help the continent move in that direction. And in part because we know the balance of payments in South Africa are really affected by the import of pharmaceuticals. But also second to that, and we saw this under COVID when, you know, there was a shortage of vaccines for COVID that were being produced in India. You know, instead of even, you know, exporting the vaccines to where they need to be, the Indians really kept that vaccine for their own population. And this is something we're going to start seeing, especially as pandemics happen more often globally. In South Africa, we have strong capabilities around clinical skills. We actually just finalized a audit about 2 weeks ago that looked at the 30 institutions across South Africa, which are capable, which will have some capabilities to either manufacture, discover, or vaccines. This is across private sector and universities. And we found that out of the 30 institutions, at least 28 of them had some skills or capabilities around vaccine development, research, or either manufacturing in South Africa. And really, in terms of that review, is that some of the HCIs, or historically disadvantaged institutions, didn't necessarily have all the skills required, but if we're going to have a sustainable vaccine manufacturing sector in South Africa, all organizations, HCIs, need to be front and center in this opportunity. In terms of the timelines, in terms of getting a vaccine manufacturing or new vaccines up and running in 3 years, that is very possible because a lot of international organizations have been reaching out to South Africa to partner with us because of the vibrancy of our clinical trials system in South Africa, but also the capabilities that we've been building over the last two decades in South Africa in the health innovation space. And then in terms of, I just want to answer a question around, I think the Honorable Ntsuba, he talked about the issue around science and technology impact on poverty inequality. I think in the agricultural portfolio, we've been doing quite a bit of work in terms of ensuring that co-ops or you know, subsistence farmers in the rural areas are actually getting access to new technologies, be it for dealing with issues of water scarcity or even to increase their yields or reduce production costs. I mean, just about a week ago, new technologies for cotton balers were introduced in our communities, both in Limpopo and Mpumalanga, for subsistence farmers. And what happened is they vertically integrated the supply chain for these cotton farmers for cost, and actually they're reducing their costs by 1,500 rands, I think, in terms of the cost that allowed them to now take home more money and then also expand their businesses. So as a DSI, we don't necessarily serve large groups of people, but normally what we do is we serve those citizens who are often left out of the large program. So subsistence farmers and co-ops are, in a sense, who are really at the end of opportunities. Those are the ones that we serve. And I think in better partnerships with Department of Agriculture, Rural Development, and Land Reform, we can actually expand these programs. So I just wanted to bring that example up, that's something that that you may not have been aware of. And this is a program that was implemented as part of our initiative to bring new technologies and new ways of producing to subsistence farmers in South Africa, where the majority of them are Black South Africans. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Didiges. So, Honorable Chair, we're taking it back to you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Didi, for the elaborate answers to the questions and your acceptance of the invite, to give us more info on this cutting edge technologies, new technologies that are in the market, and not only in the market, but are facilitated or developed through your assistance or your direction as the department. So we'll be looking forward to that, as we know that our role as Parliament is to play oversight over the department and the ministry. But oversight is data-based, DG. If you don't have information about what is happening or details about things, it becomes really difficult. And the good news is that we have, as a committee, we have a new content advisor. I'm waiting to talk to him or her before the end of this week. If there are no further questions from the members, I'll release the DG and the team so that we remain dealing with matters related to management of the committee and other committee issues. DG and your team, thank you very much. We'll keep you wired. Bye, Danke, for responding to our call, as you usually do, as you always do. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Other members, just remain in the meeting so that we deal with our issues. Noltando? Will you flag the minutes? That members would like to say.
Yeah, that's, if there are no other comments from the members on the minutes, I'm just moving from the car now to, into the constituent office. And if there is none, is there any mover for...
Longeni moves for the adoption of the minutes.
Nkosi seconds, Chair.
Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible, Chairperson.
Oh, thank you. Is there any mover for adoption of the minutes?
Chair, move for the adoption of the minutes, and in course of seconded.
Yeah? Yeah, Ndongeni has moved. Any seconder?
Because he is seconding, Honorable Chair.
Oh, because he is seconding. Thank you very much. Noltando, what is next? Yeah, minutes of the 24th of August. Any corrections? There are the minutes, other members. Am I audible, Noltando? There's something wrong with my voice.
Yes, you are, Chair.
Am I audible?
You are audible, Chairperson.
Can hear you, Chair. Can hear you.
Honorable Ndongeni.
Yes, Chair.
Go back to the car.
You're too.
Yeah, the phone is stuck. I can't hear them. I must connect to the phone.
We freeze this. We will freeze the point.
I will, the phone. Let me connect to the car in speed again. Sure. I will Am I audible now?
Yes, Chair.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's
Are there corrections for this minute?
Yeah, no corrections.
No, is there any mover for adoption? Now I can hear you. Don't give me move 20 seconds.
I second, Ngosi.
Oh, Honorable Ngosi, second. Nortando, is there any other matter?
There's nothing else, Chair, except that we've got Mr. Solomon Ntombeni on the platform. The new content advisor of the committee starting from tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Is a new content advisor, can you get a researcher?
Welcome, Uwanum Tumbin.
New content advisor,
I'm saying the content advisor is in our meeting. Welcome, Awan, can you switch on your video so we see you?
Good morning, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible. Yes, Chairperson, good morning to all the members. Good morning to the fellow staff members. My name is Solomon Ntombeni. I will be the new content advisor for the committee. I previously served as a researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Sport, Art and Culture. And I definitely look forward to working with all the members, the chairperson, and all my colleagues within this committee. And I will give you my full effort in terms of work, and I will support you to the best of my ability. I thank you very much.
I thought you'll say, so help me God.
So help me God.
You very much welcome them, and that we're looking forward to having a permanent, content advisor. We've had very good people who were supporting us, overstretched as they were, and we're hoping that you'll take it from there and make it even better. We are not a difficult team. And as you can see, we in the NCOP, we're not like the NA where, you find one person being in five or six, seven committees, So, yeah, and our emphasis mostly is on provinces, and you will know that much better. Thank you very much, and you are welcome. We're all looking forward to working with you. Any other comment from the members before we...
Yes, Chair.
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes, of course.
Chair?
Yes, you are. Stofile.
Oh,
yes.
It's Nzube, Chair.
Nzube, oh, I see there's another hand just to fill.
Oh, my apologies, Chair. Like I said, that I can't use the hand function.
Oh, no, you're welcome. Honorable Nzube.
Am I audible, Chair?
You are loud and clear.
No, thanks, Chair. With the utmost respect, Chair, through you, I just want to bring to the light of the committee, Chair, that today is the last day of the assistant teacher program, and it has said that before that there would be an extension, Chair. Maybe through you, Chair, in your wisdom, that in the next session of the committee, maybe we can have the Department of Education in relation to the assistant teacher program. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Any other things?
Thanks, Honorable Zhu, for raising that. When we have a program and the program closes down, we need to do evaluation of that program. What did you achieve through this?
and how do we consolidate the gains that we, you know, we got from our engagement on the, you know, the assistant teachers thing. And yeah, and what have we achieved, and what is the way forward? I think it's it will be important for the department to know that, to brief us on that. Any closure of any program is to be evaluated. Thanks very much, Honorable. I think the committee secretary and the our management team will look into this matter, and then maybe talk to me, us, and then agree on a particular date we will get this briefing. It is absolutely necessary to do that. Thanks a lot again. Is there any announcements and
Check, and I go through. Thank you. Without interjecting you.
I see a hand to send, is it?
Linda, sir.
Linda, okay.
Thank you.
Let me take the opportunity again to help those who, you know, Linda and Muchegwan, for helping us through over this time when we didn't have a content advisor. Thank you very much that your involvement and, you know, efforts were never wasted. We learned quite a lot, and thanks for the good support you gave. Thank you very much. All members, can we call it a day? This meeting is adjourned.
Stop, Chair.
Yes.
Now I would like to say something.
Okay. Over to you, please.
Thank you, Chair. Good day, honorable members, Chairperson. I won't be long, Chairperson. I wanted to give just a brief overview of what is the next step. I was under the impression that Mr. Bandi will attend the meeting and introduce Mr. Mthombeni, because he has crossed the floors now. He is no longer reporting to me. However, I want to assure the members that they are in the good hands. Mr. Mthombeni understands the need of the NCOP work. He has participated in various programs. And I've already assured him that we won't just leave the committee. We'll support from the background as a senior researcher in education. Lastly, honorable members, I also wanted to indicate that I'm foreseeing that the committee will have a researcher by the 1st of October. I did inquire last night with HR, trying to check what is happening, and they said they are still awaiting the feedback from HRE on the recommended candidates. So that's all that I wanted to say, honorable members. Once more, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members, for your support and being patient with us when we were having a lot of responsibility to take care. We'll be working at the back, supporting our colleagues. Thank you.
And it was a mute. Sure. Am I audible now?
Yes, Chair.
Oh, no, I muted myself. Sorry.
Audible now, Chair.
Yeah, I was there. Without repeating what I've said, is there any other thing, Ms. Kaka, before we close the meeting? Noltando?
No, there's nothing else,
sir. Okay, thanks a lot. Honourable members, thanks for attending this meeting. Thanks for responding promptly. This meeting is adjourned. Bye, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sure. Yeah, not bad.